This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to part 3 of 4 in this series where me, myself, Greg Diener, and Robert Silva go over our top 10 in the Place to Be Nation's top 100 greatest WWE workers of all time, and our discussion of our top 10s continues with Rowdy Roddy Piper. Alright, so we got Savage at number 7. Now, I already said my number 6 was Shawn, so let's go to your number 6, which is Rowdy Roddy Piper.
And man, there would be no WWF today if it wasn't for Roddy Piper as being the lead heel coming off the expansion of 1984. You had Hogan. McMahon's original plan, from what I was told, from what I've read, from what Dave said too, was he wanted Flair as his number one heel. But Flair wasn't leaving Crockett. He offered Flair a lot of money. Flair wasn't leaving Crockett. So he couldn't get the number one guy in Crockett. He went and got the number two guy in Crockett, Roddy Piper. And Roddy Piper first came into the WWF as a manager, as the Grand Wizard's replacement, as the Grand Wizard that died a few months before the expansion occurred. From the very first taping was right after Christmas, right after, I think it was a day or two after the Iron Sheik had beaten Backlund. They did the taping in St. Louis where they brought in all the stars, Paul Orndorff, Dr. D. David Schultz, Hulk Hogan, Roddy Piper. Roddy Piper was announced as the manager of Dr. D. David Schultz and Paul Orndorff. And I was reading the aftermath throughout 83. Piper had this red-hot feud with Greg the Hammer Valentine. And Piper was one of my favorites, even though I had never seen him. I just love hearing the stories. And that door collar match sounded like and lived up to his hype when I finally did see it. But back then, I'd never seen it, only heard of Piper. Oh, no, actually, I did see Piper on Florida Wrestling early in 83, where he turned on Mike Graham. And he was incredible during that 2 or 3 week run in Florida. Comes to the WWF, and I pop immediately as I'm watching this early January 84 on television. Like, yes, Piper. He comes in as a heel. And he gives this phenomenal interview off the charts. And I'm like, there you go. There goes your lead heel. He begins, middle of January, they do the Piper's Pit. They begin the inception of Piper's Pit, where he begins. And what really sets him off is the coconut incident in April of 84, where he cracks the coconut over Jimmy Snuka's head. And that begins a tremendous feud with Jimmy Snuka that did big business throughout the summer of 84. Snuka has to go to rehab. I'm at the match at the Garden, where they do the angle where Snuka breaks his neck. Piper beats him by countout. They bring in the Tonga Kid, and he does some great matches with Piper. And then Orton and Piper versus the Tonga Kid and Snuka, some tremendous matches. Then out of nowhere, the Tonga Kid leaves. Just leaves. But they begin to build December 28th, 1984, Madison Square Garden. I couldn't get tickets to this card. It sold out right away. The night Captain Lou Albano turned face.
Oh, yes.
He did charity work. Dick Clarke presents him with the award. Piper comes in, interrupts it, destroys Albano with the award. And that begins the era where Piper, for 2 years, is the biggest heel on the planet. And that leads to the build for the first WrestleMania. You do the war to settle the score, February of 85. Again, I can't get tickets to it. It sells out right away. They have the match on MTV. Mr. T interferes. Cindy Lauper interferes. Orndorff comes in. Orton comes in. Snuka comes in. That sets off WrestleMania. There is no success of WrestleMania if not with the super heel that Roddy Piper was.
And the war to settle the score, people forget, that was like a giant event on MTV in 85. You had like everybody, it's like you had everybody commenting on this match. Like everybody in
Joe Piscopo.
Yeah.
Joe Piscopo.
Danny DeVito.
Danny DeVito. Oh, you had a who's who.
Yeah, it was like everybody wanted to be at the Garden that night for this one match.
What's that? Rock and roll. I can't understand one word. I listen to Tina Turner, Cindy Lauper, and the rest of those pencil neck geeks out there, and they're all stuck for an answer when you tell them hello.
He said what? Freddie, we're not stuck for an answer when you say hello. We just don't want to know that you're alive.
Long live rock and roll. Long live Tina Turner. Long live my main girl, Cindy Lauper. Because every dog needs the bone that you own.
Rock and wrestling is here to stay. Ronnie Piper, you gonna pay.
When I come from, rock and roll don't exist because music is something where you can feel the notes. When the artists come, classic music comes.
Sing
people
something
and
good
sing.
For
and I just like to show you what the music sounds
sing
like.
Sing something beautiful.
When the KGB heard Volkov sing, they gave him a choice between a Siberian salt mine and the World Wrestling Federation.
And then...
And Bob Costas called the match.
Yeah, Bob Costas. You have like a who's who of pop, like the zeitgeist of pop culture in 1985 is at this one match at the Garden. Like no other company in pro wrestling could ever equal that. That's the advantage they had. That's the advantage the WWF had with New York City at the Garden.
Right,
is
right.
You could attract yep. the big A-list people and make it like a heavyweight title fight. And it worked to perfection. And then you have Mr. T coming out, trying to pick a fight with Piper, and then the building just erupts. And that's when you go to the first WrestleMania.
And the first WrestleMania, even up until the day of the match almost didn't happen because Piper was told to job to Mr. T, and Piper wasn't doing no job to Mr. T. And Piper talked about that in his book. On the podcast that he's had in several shoot interviews, there was no way in the world he was going to do a job to a Hollywood actor.
No. So then I guess Orndorff does the job.
Yeah, Orndorff agrees to do the job because Piper refused.
And, you know, the first WrestleMania, nobody, up until the day of the show, thought how well it was going to do because. I guess the Crow Circuit locations, like, they didn't get a good enough advance. And it wasn't until, I think, the night before Hogan and Mr. T were on Saturday Night Live hosting. And I think that...
It boosted the walk-up the following day. And McMahon put his entire, all his money on this WrestleMania. It was do or die. If it would have flopped like it looked it was going to flop, they probably would have to sell.
Yeah. But, I mean, that first WrestleMania, it's not the most spectacular show.
No, it's a WWF house show.
No,
Cold Circuit. Yeah.
It wasn't about having a great match, but it was about the spectacle of it all. That's what attracted people to that first WrestleMania. And it delivered on the spectacle.
And it was a who's who. You talk about pop culture?
Yeah.
You had a who's who of pop culture that night at WrestleMania. Muhammad Ali. Billy Martin. Liberace. Unbelievable the star power that was there for that first WrestleMania.
And then we go into WrestleMania 2 where it's Piper and Mr. T again. And it's the awful boxing match at the Nassau Coliseum, which...
Horrible idea. And the fans of the Coliseum were rooting for Piper and booing the shit out of T.
And Duma really laying the rap on Roddy Piper. Seconds out.
Uh-oh. I told you, Vince.
Oh, my.
I told you.
Look at this now. Beginning of round four.
I told you.
Oh, and a right hand by Piper.
Come on.
And
wait a minute. Come on. Wait a minute. I knew this was coming. I knew it. Well, why isn't Gordon Liddy, isn't he a judge?
Resorting to the wrestling. Look at this. All the men in there.
By that time, Mr. T was done. They didn't want to see him anymore.
No. And there's that one part in Piper's DVD where, like, he's so angry with Mr. T, he throws his stool at him. Like it literally hits Mr. T's leg, like, because he's so angry at how horrible this freaking match is. It's just that entire WrestleMania 2 is just so painful to watch.
And then Piper takes a sabbatical to film a movie and comes back in the summer of 86 and has what at that point was the single greatest babyface turn in WWF history.
Yes, with Adrian Adonis in the flower shop.
That segment, when he came back and they did the battle between the flower shop and Piper's Pit, he was phenomenal. I mean, he was so good, Adrian Adonis started stuttering. You know what to say? Like, oh, go back there. Oh, you go back over there. Here, here's a flower. He was phenomenal. He was phenomenal on that, and then they wind up jumping him, Morocco Orton and Adonis, and just a great angle. And, I mean, Piper was over before that. That made him even more over. He was a spectacular babyface.
And what was so great when Piper turned, it was like the faces got all the heat from Piper with his promos. Now it was the heel's turn to get the wrath from Piper.
With the toilet seat,
yeah.
Over Harley Race's hair. Oh my God! He made a comment which you can't make today, where Slick comes out. And he goes, "Oh my God, your lip! You couldn't do that today."
No.
I mean, he ties up Jimmy Hart. He turns the table. What he was giving faces hell for years. Now he's giving the heels what he used to give the faces.
And there's this one moment I love from an October 86 Gordon MSG House show where him and Bob...
Yes! Brian Last on the 605 Super Podcast talked about it. Justin and Scott talked about it on that. Yes, where he makes a bet with Heenan. Talk about foreshadowing.
Where he makes...
The Mets down 2-0 in the World Series. And he says, I will bet you the Mets win it all.
and Bobby's like, well, I never lose a bet. And Piper's like, so you're saying the Mets will win then?
Yeah.
I bet Bob, I can only imagine, I want a picture of Bobby Heenan watching game 6 of the 86 World Series at 10th inning, being so confident with two outs that the Red Sox are going to win.
Strikes. And two strikes, two out of two strikes.
And then Phil Buckner feels the ball between his legs. Oh. And then everyone forgets, the next game, game 7.
They're up 3-0. The Red Sox take a 3-0 lead.
They're up 3-0 in the bottom of the sixth, and they blow it 2. Nobody ever talks about that.
But the turning point is Bruce Hurst was pitching lights out, had a blister on his hand, they had to take him out. And after that, the Mets just bombarded the Red Sox.
What was John McNamara doing that World Series? First Clemens and then Hurst? He must have been overworking them too much. No wonder he got fired for Joe Morgan.
Calvis Garaldi. So that was great. And then the angle where he's with Bobby Heenan, the Piper's with Bobby Heenan. Bobby Heenan, Harley Race are in the ring, and Harley Race, he's like, if you get a tag team partner, we'll get a tag team partner. They're both debating over, no one's going to get a tag team partner. No one likes you, and no one likes Piper. And then Harley Race says, all right, Mr. Wonderful will be Harley Race's tag team partner. And then Piper takes legendary fan Vladimir off the audience and says, okay, who's my partner? And he screams out Hulk Hogan, and the place goes apeshit.
That is a great moment. Hogan and Piper together.
And in the following month, when they do team up, Piper abandons Hogan in the ring. He leaves him.
Yeah, it's oh well, I guess they don't. I guess they still don't like each other.
I think that was Piper. Piper would do this if he hated somebody in a prior territory or in a prior, even a WWE. He feuded with Hogan. He would kayfabe it all the way. If you remember, he had the feud with Greg Valentine. They kept them separate in 84. They didn't put them together. Finally, late 84, there was a Piper's Pit where Valentine's on the pit for the first time. And Piper's like, well, today we have a guy. Ooh. And Piper's got that look like, I can steal it with this guy. So he, you know, pretending to still have this fight for this guy. And then Valentine grabs up the mic and says, Piper, what you did to Jimmy Snuka was one of the greatest things I ever saw. And that broke the ice. Piper kept that thing, kept it going. Today, what I did yesterday doesn't count today. But Piper kept that. He did the same thing with Hogan. That's why he left Hogan in the ring. Same thing as Sadass Main Event, where he doesn't trust Hogan when he comes out with the crutch to beat Adonis on it. You know, he's looking at Hogan. He's keeping that kayfabe alive.
Yeah, and that's something you don't see. It's like everything gets forgotten. Those days, it's like they care.
They're tweeting each other the next day. Oh, how you doing? It's like Jericho, who's old, supposed to be old school. He's got Omega on his podcast a week after they have a classic match in Japan.
Kayfabe's basically dead now, but in the 80s, there's no internet. Nobody. There's like nobody's reading. Like, oh, I'm sure they are, but nobody's reading Meltzer.
But look, I remember I was reading the Aftermag, and when I saw Piper and Valentine, I was like, what are they going to do? These guys just had a huge feud. And WWF likes to forget that they're in their own universe. Piper wasn't having that. When he had the Briscoe brothers on the pit for the first time, he mentioned how they were former NWA tag team champions, that Jerry Briscoe was a former World Junior Heavyweight champion, that Jack Briscoe was a former NWA World champion. He got away with that shit.
Yeah, and he was the only guy who could work. He still worked for Don Owen.
Because, and right after the first WrestleMania, McMahon wanted to go to Portland, and Piper says, I'm not going. And I think he was suspended. So Piper, as revenge, fought on worked the 60th anniversary show in May of 85 against Buddy Rose for Don Owen.
And he could get away with that because he was Piper.
Yep. Because what's McMahon going to do? Fire me? Because the minute McMahon fires Piper, Piper goes back to Crockett. Because Piper loved Crockett.
So they had Piper has the retirement match with Adrian Adonis at WrestleMania 3 with the haircut match.
And by the way, before that WrestleMania match, the 2 weeks prior to that, the March 14th Saturday Night's Main Event, which was held in Detroit also, they did a video with Frank Sinatra's My Way of Piper and all his highlights, which is probably the single greatest music video the WWF ever produced on one of their shows. It was tremendous.
Yeah, the funniest part is when he's giving Haiti Kid that haircut.
Yes, yeah. And then the final Piper's Pit, the Saturday before WrestleMania, he has no guests. He gets up on a chair and he talks, he thanks the fans, and he gives this heartfelt speech. What a way. If he had never come back, he's still in my top 10 because of the significance he had from 84 to 87.
Definitely. And so he goes out at WrestleMania 3, an emotional moment, and he does They Live, and Hell Comes to Frogtown, the like, and then he comes back in 89 in a weird Piper's Pit with Brother Love and Morton Downey Jr.
And you know, at this time, at during this period, he was the booker for Portland. He hadn't left wrestling altogether. Yeah.
He was helping
Don Owen in Portland before he finally came back full time to the WWF in the summer of 89.
That happens with Piper's Pit, and then he has the feud with Rick Rude.
That was a great feud.
Yes.
That was a great feud. I mean, I was at the cage match in the Garden late that year. That was a tremendous match. Tremendous match.
I think one of my favorite Piper moments is Survivor Series 89, where everyone's talking about what they're thankful for. Rick Rude's like, I'm thankful for having the most ravishing body in the WF. And Piper, is the next person comes on, and his response is, I'm thankful because I ain't Ricky Rude.
And you know what was strange about that? It was Rowdy's Rowdy's?
Yeah.
And Stucker was one of his partners on that team.
Yeah. That's weird.
And I thought they were going to do a Stucker turn, but no, it wound up Stucker. That was the best match on that card. Rowdy versus Rude's Brood. And it ended with a perfect, in a great 5-minute segment with Snooker, and he pinned Snooker to win it for his team.
Then he has that feud with Bad News Brown, which is
But
terrible.
He has his feud with Perfect before Brad News
Brown.
And his feud with Perfect was a real good feud, which also culminated in a steel cage match that Piper wins. Then that followed up by the feud with Bad News Brown.
Yeah, and then you have that WrestleMania match where he's painted half black.
Piper did a lot of drugs in his life. I think that was the most powerful drug he did that day. I don't know what the fuck he was smoking that day. What possessed him to do that shit?
He
walked through the airport like that.
The best is Andre. I guess he poured the solution to getting that stuff off his face. Like down the toilet or something. So he went to the airport.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh man, it must have been hell to get that off. Let me tell you. So then Piper's like an announcement.
That was like a whole take off the music video that Michael Jackson had done with Paul McCartney like 7 years prior.
Oh, with Ebony Michael, and Ivory.
Not Ebony and Ivory. Was it Say?
Oh, yeah, say so.
Yeah,
And so it's at this point where Piper's like an announcer replacing Jesse basically when he leaves. And I never really was a big fan of the Vince Piper commentary team.
Piper was phenomenal in Georgia as a heel commentator.
He was.
He was phenomenal. He was phenomenal. Phenomenal. I mean, he was great. Then when he turned face against Morocco, when he saved solely for Morocco, it looked like he was going to be a big face. But then he got fired by Ole Anderson, and that ended his Georgia run. And he went back to Mid-Atlantic when he turned face.
Piper does have that thing in 91 where he's instrumental in Virgil turning face.
Yeah, that was after his feud with Flair.
Flair is in the summer.
He has a feud with Flair. When Flair first comes into the WWF, his first feud with Piper. Then after that feud's over, he begins to feud with DiBiase.
Okay, so so he sows the seed. He tries to help Virgil, like, realize, you shouldn't be working with this guy, with DiBiase anymore. He's treated you horribly. And then it leads to this match, the match at Royal Rumble. It's Dusty and Dustin against Ted and Virgil when Dusty's about to leave the company. And Virgil is ordered by DiBiase to get the belt. And Roddy's like, don't do it, Virgil! Don't do it!
Oh, you know, this is before Floyd. You're right. Yeah. This is the Royal Rumble 91, right before Dusty leaves. Right.
Yeah, because Flair and Dusty have the, like, squabbles like right before Flair leaves for WWF.
Well, you know, in the fall of 88, right before Starcade, Dusty had booked Rick Steiner to beat Flair in 5 minutes, and Flair loses his mind and complains to Turner and Jim Hurd, and that's when Dusty gets fired.
Yes, so I guess there's bad blood between two, but. Going back to the Rumble for a second, Virgil turns on DiBiase, Piper goes nuts, crowd goes nuts, and then
Virgil beats DiBiase at WrestleMania, right?
Yeah, by DQ, where Piper has like some sort of accident or something.
He was in a car accident in real life prior to WrestleMania, and then Sherry comes in the ring and beats on Piper, and that's right after Sherry had been fired by Savage. same WrestleMania where Savage reunites with Elizabeth. And so now Sherry is DiBiase's manager in the ongoing feud with Piper.
Yeah, and then Virgil wins the title from the $1 million belt from DiBiase at SummerSlam, which culminates in that. Hold on.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah, so Virgil wins the $1 million belt from DiBiase at SummerSlam. And that's I love that Piper on. I mean, that's the one Piper on commentary moment that I like, because he's like, "God damn it, Virgil, get up!" He's like cheering Virgil. He's like, "Go on, Virgil, get up, get up!" Oh, that show is that I love. That's a good show, SummerSlam 91.
Now, rumor had it. No, I'll talk about it after we talk about his match with Bret Hart. But there was a rumor that he was, we'll talk about it, after the Flair feud, that's when he wins the title from the Mountie to get his first WWF title, the Intercontinental title.
Yes, that's Royal Rumble 92 at Albany.
Right.
And you have the storyline of him trying to win the two titles in one night, where he's trying to be the first person.
Oh yeah, and now he's going to try to win the Royal Rumble, right?
Yeah, trying to win
the WWF title, right?
Yeah, trying to be the first person to win the Intercontinental and the WWF title in one night. But the Intercontinental title win is a big moment, because that is the first title he ever wins in WWF.
And the only title he ever wins in the WWF.
Well, actually no, because in 2006, he has like a brief tag title run with Ric Flair, because it's like at a Taboo Tuesday or something.
Oh,
where, like,
he's
He's voted as Flair's partner, and that inadvertently saves his life, because it's discovered he has like cancer.
Oh, okay.
So
was it Hodgkin's disease?
Yeah, something like, yes, Hodgkin's.
Yeah,
I think it might have been Hodgkin's disease.
Yeah.
But that inadvertently saves his life when he's voted in as Flair's partner at Taboo Tuesday. And that's weird, because people thought, because Dusty Rhodes was in that poll to vote as Flair's partner, and everyone just assumed, oh, it's going to be Dusty Rhodes.
But it turned out to be Piper.
Yeah. And that we talked about the match with Brett, WrestleMania 8, and that.
Now, Meltzer had written in the Observer, and I remember he had taped that Piper at the post WrestleMania TV taping had taped a new set of Piper's Pit.
Yes.
And I remember the week after WrestleMania, they said, coming next week, Piper's Pit. But it never aired. Piper and McMahon had a falling out, and he left the promotion right after losing to Bret Hart. And he didn't return for a year and a half.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because the unreleased DVD has a segment of one of those Piper's Pits with the Brooklyn Brawler on it.
Of all the ones he did, they got to put that one on. They couldn't have put DiBiase or Sherry or something like that.
I don't know.
Yeah, he left the WWF for 2 years after that. He didn't come back until he was the special guest referee at WrestleMania 10.
Yes, for the Bret Yokozuna match. And then it leads to Jerry Lawler, and they have like this. Oh, God, the feud is terrible. Just terrible.
Where they are the greatest talkers in the history of the business, and they have a horrendous feud.
Yeah, and they have like a kid impersonating Rowdy Piper, like kissing his feet. Oh, and then the match.
It was a train wreck.
The match is a train wreck. That's not even counting the fact that Art Donovan's announcing it. It's a train wreck
and
no
then,
matter what.
Once again, Piper leaves the WWF. He comes back in the winter of 95. He has that feud with Goldust and that incredible match.
At the
parking lot match with Goldust. Yeah.
And the amazing thing is, I think they tape the match. They taped that segment like 2 weeks prior, where I guess doesn't Piper bust open Goldust during the
they did tape it prior to the WrestleMania.
Yeah, so
prior to the pay per view.
So it's like he busts Goldust, and they have to, like, in a continuity, like, have to show like he got punched because like he's bleeding, because they do the skit where it's like, oh, he's chasing him on the freeway, and it's like the OJ chase.
Well, they show the OJ footage.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the actual OJ footage interspersed during the show.
Wait a minute, we'll take it back to... We have our cameras. Wait a minute. That's...
Look at this!
You know, I've got to say it. This footage looks awfully familiar, these shots.
Come back into the Arrowhead Pond, and then, you know, you have all sorts of shenanigans, and then Piper gets the big win.
And that would be his last WWF match for like 7 years.
Yeah, because then he comes back with at WrestleMania 19, feuding with Hogan again.
And he brings back Piper's pick, which was pretty good back then. Where he had was it DeBarry as his Bob Orton as his ace?
Sean O'Hare.
Sean O'Hare. Okay.
Yeah, Sean O'Hare.
I get Sean O'Hare right.
Yeah,
which was the biggest push of O'Hare's career.
Yeah, that was something that they that had so much promise, and then they just dropped the ball on that.
No, well, Piper was fired because of his comments on HBO Real Sports.
On Real Sports, So of course we mentioned he came back for a couple of shows like Taboo Tuesday with Flair and all that stuff. Came back for that one Royal Rumble at the Garden with Snuka at 2008.
And there was he involved in the Jericho?
Yes.
Steamboat.
Yes, he was.
Snuka and Mickey Rourke angle.
Yes, he was, because I believe the angle was for the match was they had to get four people who were at the first WrestleMania, I think.
Okay, gotcha.
So, because. It's funny because I know on Dave's segment on The Last Fame when they were talking about WrestleMania 25, someone suggest because they were talking about who Jericho was going to have the feud with after for the next pay-per-view, which turned out to be Steamboat. But they were talking
about putting
Lawler in the match, but Vince was like, no, Jerry Lawler, he can't work because he wasn't at the first WrestleMania. It's got
to
work with
people
at the first WrestleMania. And, of course, Piper would come back for sporadic segments over the years with Piper's pit.
Now, there was a great segment. I didn't see this, but Dave wrote about it, and several guys raved about it, was when Cena was having his feud.
Yes.
With the
Rock.
With the NXT crew.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes. I think it was Nexus.
The Nexus crew.
It was even.
And he had a segment with Cena, like sort of like a Piper's pit, where he ripped it to Cena, talk about, this is your career on the line, blah, blah, blah. And I heard that was a great segment.
I mean, even at, like, near the end of his life, he would still be delivering, like, dynamite segments.
I loved his podcast.
Yeah.
I loved the podcast he did before he died. And one of the last podcasts he did was when he had what's my man from Mad TV, Will Sasso, impersonate Steve Austin for, like, the first hour of the show. It was great. Piss Steve Austin off.
Didn't that get him kicked out of podcast one, I believe?
Yeah, he got fired because of that. Because Steve Austin was pissed. Because Steve Austin had some legitimate beef because he didn't show up to WrestleMania. He didn't even show up. And so Will Sasso came on there and was pretending to be Steve Austin, sounded just like him, and said, I decided to do something. It was just great. And when Steve Austin heard it, he got pissed. And got rid of it. He was the reason Piper was on the podcast to begin with. He had gotten Piper the gig, and then he kicked him off.
Man, that's something.
And then less than a month later, Piper died of a heart attack.
Yeah. What else can I say about the man? Just one of the all-time.
Yeah, covered it all. We covered it all. The single great. He was voted by WWE.com. And rightfully so, as the greatest heel in the history of the company. I mean, only one on that level would have been Vince McMahon, Mr. McMahon.
Yes. So, all right. So Savage was my number five. So we'll get to your number five, which was my number four. And that is arguably the biggest star in the modern era of WWE. Hold on a second. I'm having trouble seeing this name. Hold on. It's John Cena.
John Cena, and I've been to one house show in the last 16 years. 4 years ago, I was dating this young lady, and her son was a big wrestling fan. So I took them to the Nassau Coliseum. Yeah, it was June of 2014. We went to see a card at Nassau Coliseum. When the card was over, there was an elderly lady in the front row who reached out for John Cena. John Cena was in the main event. I couldn't tell you what was on the card because I don't follow the product. Anyway, the match was over. John Cena grabbed the lady's hand, and I told my girlfriend at the time and her son, hold up, let's watch him for a minute. He took a seat next to her and began talking to her. As everybody's leaving, he's talking to this lady. I mean, he's looking in her eyes, and he's generally in the conversation. John Cena is a good man.
Yes.
All the charity work he's done, he doesn't ask for, he doesn't brag about it. He does it out of his own heart. What I saw that night, I was like, this is a magnificent human being. What you see is what you get with John Cena. He has carried that promotion when the product has been horrible. Whenever they're lowering the ratings or not selling, they call Cena to come out. He's been the undisputed star of that promotion since 2005. When Rock and Austin left in 03, they tried the Triple H era, and it was a flop. Nobody wanted to see this motherfucker. 2005, McMahon told Triple H, get out the way. He gave the ball to Cena, and Cena has not dropped it since. I see that they're trying to make the Roman Reigns era begin. It's still, in my opinion, the John Cena era. John Cena has had tremendous matches. I've heard about his great matches with CM Punk. He had a 5-star match with CM Punk, right? He's
Money
had
in the
great
Bank
matches
11.
With Randy Orton. He's been a great worker.
Yes.
He's been a great draw. He's been a great spokesman. He is everything you ever wanted in a professional wrestler, the way he carries himself inside and outside the ring.
Yeah, I can't.
John Cena.
Yeah, John.
I mean, that night when I saw him, I couldn't believe it. I could not believe. I never seen a wrestler do that before.
It's amazing what a type of performer he is. Because I remember when he came back that one Royal Rumble at the Garden where he was injured, and people thought he wouldn't be back till probably WrestleMania. And he comes out at number 30, and the crowd
goes crazy.
The crowd goes crazy. This is like in that period where he's, it's like up until a couple of years ago where he's getting booed at certain places and people are going nuts and they're like, wait a minute, we're supposed to hate this guy. But it's like the whole thing about how can I miss you if you don't go away? And at one moment it was just the Garden just went crazy because nobody, and not even the dirt sheets, thought that was going to happen.
It was a surprise to everybody. You're right. Yeah.
And I think if you talk about the people who have been on top of the company, going back to the beginning in 63, he probably has the second longest run on top.
Yeah, like, after Bruno.
After
Bruno's
Bruno.
One, Cena's two when it comes to longevity on top.
Yeah, so it's like, in the modern WWE from 84 on, he has had the longest reign at the top of the card, and he is tied Ric Flair's record, and it's gonna happen where he breaks the record, and it's gonna be something when he actually does finally get that 17th
world
title.
Now, is it true? Is he facing Undertaker at this year's WrestleMania?
I don't know for sure if he's facing Undertaker at WrestleMania, but that's probably the last dream match, and I'm surprised it didn't happen at last year's WrestleMania, because that should have been if Undertaker was going to retire, that would have been the perfect way to end the career, like the perfect passing of the torch moment.
But the torch was already passed. You got to the torch had been passed a long time ago.
Yeah.
Cena's been number one, like you said, for 13 years now. To me, this would be similar to his match with his matches with The Rock, where it's these two legends going at it, and it will probably add subscribers to the WWE Network and more pay-per-view buys on the regular pay-per-view channels. So it only makes sense. I mean, Undertaker's already done jobs to Lesnar and Reigns, so it doesn't matter who does the job. It matters as far as this historical match.
Yeah, so, I mean, it doesn't matter, in my opinion, who if that does happen, who wins. It's just the fact that we've never seen... I'm surprised... I don't think they've ever faced each other. And that would be, like, a great main event for a WrestleMania, if that does happen.
And it only makes sense, because right now, there's no buzz about the product. So that would be a huge buzz. I mean, Roman Reigns has not panned out to be what they thought. They totally missed the boat on Nakamura. I mean, they talk about AJ Styles versus Nakamura. Yeah, if this was Japan, not the WWE.
But I think, you know, but WrestleMania has the smart mark crowd there, and they're going to
sell out whatever. Well, they'll have huge crowds because it's based on the name. They sell on a name, but. Yeah. When you have that special match like Cena Rock, it adds even more money to the fans' call. And there's only one match that could do that if he was to match Cena with Undertaker. Because Rock's not coming back. Austin's retired. Nobody gives a fuck about Triple H. It's got to be Cena Undertaker.
Yes. And at the time we're recording this, it's the Royal. The day before is the Royal Rumble. So it'll be curious to see what the lead up is going to WrestleMania this year.
But you don't have that buzz. Every year you have that buzz. You don't have a buzz this year. You don't.
No.
There's no buzz.
So, yeah. I mean, it's going to be something to see what happens these next couple weeks in the lead up to WrestleMania. I mean, they got, I don't know. I mean, it's like that every year though. It's like, oh, this WrestleMania is going to be the worst ever. And then it turns out, you know what? Not so bad.
You're going to have good matches when you got AJ Styles, Nakamura, Kevin Owens. Those guys are great workers. I'm talking about that buzz, that pop culture buzz.
Yeah, the buzz. It's like you haven't had that.
The only match that could give you that great buzz would be Cena Undertaker, the match that's been rumored for months.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com. And we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, and NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Back to the show. Well, that will segue. Your number four was Rock, and we talked about him.
We talked about him already.
So now we'll get into to my number three, which was the segues
the
into
Undertaker.
The Undertaker.
Yes.
Without a doubt in my mind, the greatest gimmick in the history of WWE is the Undertaker.
The greatest gimmick in the history of professional wrestling, period. End of story.
Yeah. I think if you gave that Undertaker gimmick to any other person,
it would have flopped. Look what happened when they gave it to Brian Lee as the fake Undertaker.
Did not work. But with the Undertaker, you bought that he was this undead zombie with the way he would roll his eyes, the way he would walk to the ring, that pale skin. I love when he debuts at the Survivor Series 90 as the mystery partner for Ted DiBiase.
He was trying to
I have said a million times before, everybody's got a price for the $1 million man. So without further ado, I will introduce to you now my mystery partner, led to the ring by his manager, Brother Love, weighing in at 320 pounds from Death Valley, I give you The Undertaker.
The Undertaker, the mystery partner, is now revealed.
I never heard of him.
Oh, take a
look. Holy cow. Look at the size of that ham hock. Check out them drumsticks, baby.
320 pounds. Looks to be 6'9", 6'10", somewhere in that neighborhood, Rod.
6'10"? I don't know. It's hard to tell from here. Holy cow.
And look at the look on the face.
Do you think it's his coffee? Doesn't look like he's having a good time. You think he'd steal the gold out of your teeth? Huh.
There's only supposed to be four members on a team. This guy makes 4.5, maybe 5.
Look at them eyes. We need a little nine-nine time there, pal. Hey, Buckaroo. Yeah, look at him. Yeah, he doesn't look friendly at all.
And you hear that. The music for the... It's not the traditional Undertaker the music you would have later on. But it's like that type. It's sort of similar, but not. And I would like it...
And despite the fact that Brother Love walks out with him,
it
doesn't hurt him.
Yeah. It has that... The music he first comes out to has that... It's like someone just put a knife to your back and just stabbed you with it. Like the way the organ sounds. And when you see him for the first time, it's like, oh my God. Because it's like, you've never seen somebody like this. You look at the crowd, they'd have no idea how to react to what they're looking at.
I mean, when I first saw him, I was like, what the fuck? Like, who is this guy? I mean, and I found out later that day, a couple of days later when I got the Observer, that it was Mark Calloway, being Mark Callis from WCW. And I was like, wow, McMahon knows what to do. This gimmick was born for Mark Calloway.
Yes. And from what I believe, like, the original name for The Undertaker was going to be Kane the Undertaker. And I've heard Bruce Prichard talk
that
about...
He came out as Kane the Undertaker. That was his original name.
His original name was Kane the Undertaker.
Yes.
I've heard Bruce Prichard talk about this on the kayfabe, one of the kayfabe commentaries, I think.
He should know, he was his first manager.
Yeah. The whole idea behind the name Kane, the Undertaker, was he was going to be named after named after the first person who committed murder in the Bible, which was Cain.
Cain of Cain and Abel?
Yeah, Cain and Abel.
And it only makes sense because years later, when they do bring Cain, that's a Cain and Abel story, Cain and the Undertaker.
Yes. So he debuts at Survivor Series and just murders Coco Beware with the tombstone. And when he hits Coco with the tombstone, Gorilla doesn't know how to react to it.
Outsmarted and outstruck.
Look at this!
Hang on to him like a sack of
flour! Oh, he just got nailed with a tombstone!
What is it?
I think it's a tombstone and it's over! It's over for that guy!
It sure was a tombstone!
It's like... just, oh! He hit him with the tombstone! It's like, I think that's what it's called. And so, Brother Love segues into Paul Bearer, which the debut is pretty funny because Brother Love introduces Paul Bearer, and so he's like, Brother Bearer, welcome to the Brother Love Show. May I ask, what's your first name? And Paul Bearer says, Paul.
And
it's like, Paul Bearer. And Vince is like, oh. Like, oh, I get it. Paul Bearer. Like, what a perfect combination. Undertaker and
perfect combination. Perfect combination. It's sort of like, when you think of manager-wrestler combos, that's right into, similar to Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express. Paul Bearer and the Undertaker. They were a match made to be made together.
Yeah. And no other combination, I think, compares to those two.
Undertaker. No, those are the two single. Maybe in the 70s in Texas, Gary Hart, the Spoiler. But as you talk about it on a nationwide basis, those are the two greatest combos. Jim Cornette, Midnight Express, Paul Bearer, the Undertaker.
Yes. And Undertaker that first year, he has the program that summer with Warrior.
Which he did several jobs to Warrior. I was at the Garden where he lost the casket match to the Ultimate Warrior. People forget, Undertaker, when he feuded with the Warrior, he was putting the Warrior over every night until the Warrior disappeared at SummerSlam and it made it look like the Undertaker killed him.
And then you go to the match with Hogan at Survivor Series, where he has the one-week title reign. He loses the belt back at the Tuesday in Texas.
This Tuesday in Texas, right.
Yeah, and then it leads to the belt being vacant in the Royal Rumble and all that. And then he turns face with Jake against Jake. And that was the best thing for his character, because with a character like The Undertaker, eventually at some point, he had to turn face. Because the fans just wanted to cheer for this guy, this undead zombie guy.
Yes, without a doubt. I mean, and plus, I mean, as a heel, it's short term because he's going up against all these guys that are much shorter than him. How believable is it for him to keep losing to these guys? He turns face, now he's the superhero. He's the zombie superhero.
So, Undertaker had beats Jake Roberts at WrestleMania. Jake's out the door after that.
Who's the next you? Papa Shango, right? Papa Shango.
Papa Shango. No, Kamala. He faced. Yeah, maybe on the house shows.
Yeah,
but
Kamala.
Kamala
right.
At Summers.
Kamala, right.
SummerSlam, and then they have the first
Kamala turn face.
Yeah.
Right.
Then he has the casket match at Survivor Series, and then we get to Giant Gonzalez. That was
the dreaded shit. But then his feud with Yokozuna, that was a tremendous feud where he loses to Yokozuna at the 94 Royal Rumble, in which he ascends to the heavens as he's dead.
And 10 guys have to put him in a casket.
That was great. That was great.
And then Jim Cornette and Mr. Fuji steal the urn, and Green Gook comes out of it. It's the most ridiculous, like, overbooked thing I've ever
It was over the top, but because it was the Undertaker, it worked.
It did. And so he doesn't show up again until Undertaker versus Underfaker at SummerSlam.
Right.
And then
that was a short-lived program. But then after the fake Undertaker goes, he fused with Yokozuna, which culminates in the Survivor Series match with Chuck Norris.
and Chuck Norris.
He was great. Chuck Norris was great. I love it.
And he super kicks Jeff Jarrett in the face.
That was great. He's beating up all the heels. King Kong Bundy. He's beating up.
And this was in the days before Chuck Norris facts on the internet. So if the internet was around in 1994, I bet those heels wouldn't have messed with him. But
yeah, Chuck Norris was kicking ass. Chuck Norris is a badass. I mean, Chuck Norris was a legit badass. And he was great. He was great as that enforcer. And Yokozuna goes down to the Undertaker. Undertaker gets his revenge in what was probably Yokozuna's best feud. Yokozuna, I put him in my top 100. He was an underrated worker. Too bad he got too fat, because for a big man, he was a tremendous worker.
I'm trying to... I had Yoko in the low 50s.
So you did have him.
I had him
in my top 100. And deservedly so, because he was a tremendous heel. And he had a great tag team with Owen Hart.
Oh, it was probably one of my favorite tag team combinations, because I don't think I ever saw a tag team like that where you had big fat guy and speedster guy.
Yeah, they were great. They were great together. Very underrated talent, Yokozuna. He ate his way out of the Fed, and he died at too young of an age. But he was a tremendous work. Those Samoans. Their fathers were the worst workers, because the kids were all great workers.
I know, it's so weird that what is it? Afa, Sika, all those, and their kids are like way better than they ever were.
Yes, Sabala, Tama, Rikishi, Yokozuna, Roman Reigns, they blow away their parents.
So 95 is the year where I get it. See, it feels like 50 years, but it's the thing where Undertaker's urn gets stolen and Kama melts it to jewelry and King Babel that entire year was just terrible. But
we said 95 was, and he didn't wrestle at WrestleMania 95, right?
No, he wrestled Bundy at WrestleMania.
Okay. So there was one of these WrestleManias he didn't wrestle. Was it 96?
It was the...
96 he wrestled Diesel.
He didn't wrestle. Because that was during...
That's right, because he had... Because the Royal Rumble, he disappeared till SummerSlam, right?
Yeah. So 96, he starts with Brett. And they have a match for the title, which Diesel interferes in, I believe.
And then he interferes in the match against Diesel, when his hair comes up from underneath the ring, which was great.
Yes. And then it leads to the Undertaker-Diesel match at WrestleMania 12, which we said it wasn't really that spectacular of a match.
Yeah, because Diesel was leaving. So, Diesel, he did the job and he left.
Yeah. But then the next night...
But then, right, you're taking the words right out of my mouth. Go ahead, continue.
Mick Foley debuts as Mankind.
And this is the first time that you could see Mark Calloway could work. I never thought he was a good worker. he never had a great match in the WWF until Mick Foley arrived.
And those two were just magic together. I believe it's King of the Ring where Mankind gets the upset victory over Taker. And then
when does Paul Bearer turn on Undertaker and leave him for Mankind?
It is Summer. It's the Boiler Room match at SummerSlam is when he turns on the Undertaker.
That was a great turn. That was a great fucking turn. It came out of nowhere. I was shocked.
And so Undertaker then. I'm trying to think what his feud was in that the rest. Oh, there, I think there was a Buried Alive match, too, in 96. I think, yeah.
I'm trying to think, what happened after Undertaker?
Left.
Well, let me see, in early 97, he was part of that Fatal Four. Yeah, he began the feud with Sid Vicious.
Yeah, and then they have the title match at Mania, where Sid allegedly craps his pants.
And that was another god-awful match. None of these WrestleMania matches were any good for Undertaker.
Until
it was one bad match after another.
Yeah, it wasn't until he faced Hunter at the Astrodome WrestleMania where he
that
actually...
was his first good match because the Boss Man match was horrible. Yeah, every WrestleMania match was horrible until 2001, when he beat Triple H, and thank God because I thought the streak was coming to an end that day because you know Triple H was with the boss.
Buried everyone.
He was buried everybody.
That was a one time where it's
he had just gone over Stone Cold at that three at when we mentioned when we talked about Stone Cold, the three stages of fear or terror, whatever they call that, hell, three stages of hell. He goes over Austin, then does a job to Undertaker at WrestleMania.
97 is where the seeds of Kane start to come in. Where Paul Bearer
begins to tease, oh, you had a younger brother! You burned him! You killed your parents, Undertaker!
One of my favorite moments was when the whole thing starts where Paul Bearer just teases he has a secret. And nobody knows what it is. And I remember on the pre-show to King of the Ring, 97, Todd Pettengale's going to the crowd asking, well, what... They asked people in the audience, what do you think the secret is? And so one person in the crowd actually says, I think Harvey Whippleman is his brother.
His brother, yeah.
Well, it was close, but it wasn't Harvey Whippleman.
And finally, when the reveal came out, and he talked about that he was responsible for killing his parents, and then was it Paul Bearer was actually Kane's father? And the whole thing culminated at that Hell in a Cell when Kane finally came out against Shawn Michaels.
Yes, and then you have the Undertaker and Kane, and they Undertaker doesn't want to fight Kane because he's his brother. He won't fight his own flesh and blood. And then it's Kane. I'm trying to remember. Kane tries to fool the Undertaker into thinking he's with him, and then it's the casket match with Shawn at 98 Rumble where they pour the gasoline on the casket.
Yeah, yes.
And then that leads to the WrestleMania match with Kane. And then the rest of the year you have King of the Ring 98 with Mankind. We got to talk about that.
Oh! Undertaker was in probably the two greatest Hell in a Cell matches of all time. He was in the match with Shawn in 97. And then in King of the Ring 98, he has this match with Mankind, which... What Mick Foley did that night and day, he could retire, and he's in the Hall of Fame. That was just incredible. Those bumps that Mick Foley took in that match. Oh, and it was the second great Hell in a Cell match that Undertaker was involved in. Unbelievable match.
And the whole thing is crazy because Foley's throwing like a chair on top of the cage like before the match starts. And and he wants Undertaker to climb up, and they're fighting up on top. And you hear this dread from JR, like, they're right above us, and I don't like this one damn bit, because it's like he knows something's going to happen. Like, you just have this sense of dread. And then when he finally throws him off the cell, you see the crowd stand like, what? And then he falls on the table, and they're like, oh my God!
And you know, they're ending the match right there. Terry Funk's in second, and they look like they're taking it to the back, and then he turns around and goes back to the cage.
Yeah, that's the thing that was so nuts. I was watching this in Scramble Vision, because I didn't pay for this, obviously.
Well, I had the illegal black box, so I was watching this going, what the fuck is going on here?
So when he's coming back, I'm like, there's no way he's going to come back and continue the match. He just fell 20 feet. And then he choke slams him through the cage.
Unbelievable. And you know what? Undertaker didn't take a single bump in that match, and it was a classic match. Everything was Mick Foley.
Yeah, that... Did that match get rated 5 stars by Dave?
I think Dave gave it like 4 or 4.5. He didn't give it 5 stars. He gave the Michaels Undertaker Hell in a Cell match in 97 5 stars. But not this match, because it was a one man show. You can't give a 5-star match to a one man show. Undertaker did nothing but push him twice.
And so SummerSlam, him and Austin have a phenomenal match at the Garden for the title.
Yeah, because the Undertaker turns heel and he begins the feud with Austin. And in the fall of 98, he's with his brother, both managed by Vince McMahon. Paul Bearer disappeared. I don't know what happened with Paul Bearer, but remember, McMahon was managing Kane and Undertaker in the fall of 98.
Yeah, I think Paul was too busy getting some chemicals, but because they have the double pin on Austin, and then he loses the title, but the title's held up. Undertaker and Kane have a match the next pay-per-view. Austin does shenanigans as the guest referee, and then that leads to the tournament.
And then Undertaker and Kane beat up McMahon, where McMahon's cursing them both out.
Yeah. And then then it leads to the Ministry, which is, I think it's probably like the worst period of Undertaker, in my opinion, is the Ministry.
I think it could have only worked if Jake Roberts or Kevin Sullivan would have been the higher power. It wasn't going to be Sullivan. He was booking, still with WCW at the time. Yeah, so it had to, but it was supposed to be Jake, but Jake was supposed to be in 2 high-profile programs. And he blew both because of his drug abuse. He was supposed to be the higher power, and he was supposed to be involved in the Raven DDP feud, because they kept mentioning his name on Nitro.
Oh, I didn't know he was going to be in that feud.
He was supposed to be in both feuds, one after the other, at both times. He couldn't stay sober. He was too much of a train wreck to be brought in. Yeah, if you notice, they kept mentioning his name over and over again. DDP and Raven will talk about they were both mentored by this guy. This guy helped them in their career back and forth. And, you know, Raven had like that devil-like character, sort of like Kevin Sullivan and Jake Roberts. And DDP was battling him. And with The Undertaker, his first mentor in the WWF was Jake Roberts. So the higher power would have been perfect had Jake been able to maintain himself. He couldn't.
No, unfortunately. So,
and with McMahon being the higher power, that shit just died of horrific death.
Yeah, and then there's some stuff later on where, like in '99, where he's teaming with Big Show and he's doing a promo about leaving Big Show behind at the desert. It's just, ugh.
What's that?
Paul said we're gonna need 2 bikes for a ride into the desert. The guy said, Brother Paul, now we know the dead man can handle it, but I don't know about the Big Show. It's August. It's 120 degrees in the middle of Death Valley. He says the only thing that survives in Death Valley are the cold-blooded, the snakes and the lizards. Paul said, that's all right. And in one of those bikes that you're setting up for us, I want the Big Show only to have enough gas to get to the middle of the desert and not get back.
What?
Turn it off.
So we're on our way. We get to the middle of Death Valley, 120 degrees. The Big Show's bike runs out of gas.
Turn it off!
I pull up next to him, and I ask him this question. It's 120 degrees. How are you going to survive? He looks me straight in the eyes. Without a hesitation, he says, I'm going to wait till you go to sleep. I'm going to stab you in the back. I'm going to cut your flesh off, make a coat out of it, and I will eat your flesh until I find food.
Yeah.
Just...
Undertaker's going through a bad time, but he turns it around when he does the biker gimmick. That turns his character around.
Yes. And I think it made a lot of sense. It's like he's been this dead guy for so long. It was kind of refreshing to see him be himself for once. Like, not as like the dead man character, but as like himself.
Hey, it added a new element to his character, and it was a fresh look at him, and you know, he reinvented himself.
Yes. It made good matches
and he had the great theme music with the Kid Rock song, right? The Kid Rock.
Yes, American Badass. And then it led into Limp Bizkit. And it was kind of perfect because it was like using acts that were like popular at the time, making him seem
right
to the culture of the 2000s. So, and then we go into WrestleMania 17, as we mentioned, the first, I think, legitimately good WrestleMania match with Triple H.
Yeah, his first good WrestleMania match. That was a tremendous match, and when he pinned Triple H, I almost fell out of my fucking chair. Triple H was a jobber to nobody back then. I was shocked.
And that I think is the first time they ever mentioned the streak, like on the broadcast.
Yes.
Like he's now 10-0. And it's like you didn't even think that he was undefeated at WrestleMania until they brought it up. And then it becomes like the thing that defines the wrestler's career.
Like Dave said, it was by accident. It wasn't something that was intentional. It wasn't until WrestleMania 17 that they realized he's never lost in WrestleMania, which shocked me that Triple H wasn't the one to beat the streak both times.
Yeah, and so I'm trying to... And it's not like until he has that weird heel turn like in 2001.
Well, right after WrestleMania, he turns heel. Oh, is it 2000? No, it's 2002. Not 2001. It's 2000.
Yeah.
No, it's two. Wait a minute. Hold up. Time out. I'm trying to remember.
I don't even remember.
It's 2002. It's 2002. 2002, where he turns on Jim Ross and he destroys Jim Ross. And that's right before he beats Hogan for the title.
Yeah, and then I'm trying to think. He turns back face, and I believe he has like right.
Isn't he still a heel when he beats Flair for McMahon?
Yes, at WrestleMania 18.
Right. And he turns face after that.
Then he turns face after SummerSlam, and then I think right when Brock wins the title, he has the first one or two matches with him after he wins the title, and that was a big thing for Brock's career, giving Brock the rub, and that
that
really helped Brock moving forward as like, well, this guy's now a big threat.
It can only help you if The Rock and then Undertaker, two of our top 10, are giving you the rub.
Then I remember Kane, Barrett, then Kane, There's some match at Survivor Series 90, not 03, where Kane, Barry, I know you weren't watching.
Paul Bearer gets put in cement?
No. It's Kane in 2003 in a match against Vince with Undertaker. Vince against The Undertaker at Survivor Series 2003. Hold on, I'm gonna search this right now. Oh, it is Mr. McMahon defeated The Undertaker in a Buried Alive match. Yeah, so Kane helps Mr. McMahon beat The Undertaker. Undertaker's Buried Alive doesn't come back until WrestleMania against Kane.
So it's his second WrestleMania match where he beats Kane.
Yeah, where he becomes the dead man again. And that's when Paul Bearer comes back, and then later on is where Paul Bearer gets buried in cement. Which is so hilariously bad.
Oh! Now, who buried him in cement?
Undertaker buried him in cement.
Oh, okay.
So, it was some weird thing with, like, Paul Heyman and the Dudley Boys, and I think Paul Bearer and the Dudley Boys are going to bury Paul Bearer in cement, and then Undertaker stops him, but for some reason Undertaker is the one who buried... I don't know.
Sounds like Russo booked it, even though he wasn't there at the time. Like a Russo book.
It really does. And then I think going forward, 2007 is where he has like a streak of great WrestleMania matches. And this is he wins the Royal Rumble 1 year, and then he faces Batista at WrestleMania.
That was a great match. I saw that match. I was at a friend's house. And they ordered pay-per-view. That was a great match.
Yeah, and that is kind of like the beginning of a streak of Undertaker having great matches.
He has great matches with Batista, two with Triple H, and was it one or two with two with Shawn Michaels. Was it one or two with
it was Triple H? With Triple H, it was two, because the first one was the match that single-handedly kind of made the Atlanta WrestleMania not seem horrible, because that's the WrestleMania 27 is the one that has the horrible, like, Miz Cena thing where Rock interferes and Miz retains the title.
Okay, all right, I got you.
Yeah, I haven't watched it.
So he has the match with Batista in 07. Yeah. 08 and 09 is with Shawn, because Shawn retires after the 09 match, and then 10 and 11 is against Triple H.
No, because 08 he's facing Edge for the title.
So it must have been 09 and
10. 09
and
10.
Because right, was Shawn Michaels. 11 and 12 was Triple H. Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
And the match with Edge is the one where...
that was a great match, too. I saw that match also.
He beats him with the Hell's Gate. And it comes out of nowhere, too. Which is what I love
that
finish.
That's the same WrestleMania as Flair versus Michaels.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so 25 and 26 are the two matches with Shawn, where 25 it's like, I think it's booked like Shawn's the angel and Taker's the devil, and Shawn comes out all in white and stuff.
But both matches were face versus face.
Yes, both of them were face versus face. Yeah, so Taker retires Shawn after 26, and then... Yeah, they have then Triple H, they have the match 27-28. And then the 21 is CM Punk at the MetLife WrestleMania.
Yeah, that was the one where they mocked Paul Bearer's death?
Yes.
Which was very a tasteless angle, very tasteless. Where Paul Heyman was dressed up as Paul Bearer, this right after he had died, or Percy Pringle had died in real life.
Yeah, and then 30 is where Brock breaks the streak, which was legitimately one of the most shocking moments in the history of the WWE.
Because I always thought that if they were going to put Undertaker, if Undertaker was to lose the streak, it would be against somebody that needed a rub. I think if they would have waited and gave it to Roman Reigns like they did last year, it would have been more of an impact had he not lost to Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 30. Brock was already over. You didn't have to do that.
Oh, I agree, but I think it in the long run, I think
McMahon did it because he really felt that Undertaker wasn't going to wrestle him again.
Yeah, that's probably what it was. I think it might have been that night was when they made the decision that Brock was going to win.
Yeah.
So Undertaker came back. 31 was against Bray Wyatt. I didn't care for that. He has those two matches with he has the rematch with Brock at SummerSlam, and then he comes. Then he has like a hell. I think it's a Hell in a Cell match, like at Hell in a Cell that year. And then I think he has another Hell in a Cell match with Shane at the Dallas WrestleMania.
Yeah, where yes, which I understand was a better than expected match.
Yes, it was the match where Shane makes the ridiculous 20-foot.
Yeah. How did he not break his leg?
How is he not dead after that? I'll say this about Shane McMahon.
Jim Cornette broke his leg falling off a scaffold that he was hanging on, right? This guy was 3 or 4 times higher up in the air, coming down full force, and he didn't break anything.
He survived a helicopter crash recently, for crying out loud. This guy, he has to be the most superhuman person to ever live, because
he's unbreakable. He's Bruce Willis in Unbreakable.
it's just ridiculous. And you know what? I didn't have him in the top 100. I thought about putting Shane in the top 100, legitimately.
Well, he had some great matches. He had a great match with Kurt Angle at WrestleMania 17.
King of the Ring.
It was at WrestleMania 17. It was the one where he gets suplexed through the where he gets belly to belly suplexed through the glass. That's King of the Ring, or that's WrestleMania?
It's King of the Ring because it's at the Meadowlands.
Okay.
So, yeah, and all right. So, and then we get to the last year with Roman. And that, for now, I believe is it, unless something happens, as we talked about with Cena this year.
Like you said, Greg, the single greatest gimmick in the history of professional wrestling, the WWE and professional wrestling, period, longevity. I mean, the last decade, he's been booked like Andre the Giant was booked in the 70s, where he comes in for the special occasion. And he popped the territory. If he was to wrestle Cena at WrestleMania this year, it would make WrestleMania even bigger financially for the McMahon.
Okay, that's 3 down and 1 to go, and we'll see you next time for the final part of our series when me and Robert go over our top 2 in the Place to Be Nation greatest WWE wrestler poll. And so until then, it's a goodbye for now.
What is the future of for rock and roll and the wrestling connection? First of all, it's garbage. It don't belong in the same category. I don't want these skinny little geeks around me, man. I'm a man. I'm a true man. What is the future of it? The future of professional wrestling is me. The future of rock and roll is down the toilet.
Tim, the fact is that in rock and roll, the fan, the critic, is free to recontextualize meaning. There is no such freedom exists in professional wrestling.
I don't want to bring children into a world where this thing isn't resolved.
The contention between the connection of rock and wrestling is the dialectic between the two. You've got, you know, rock on the one hand, romantic, chaotic. You've got wrestling, which is Catholic,
look,
order,
man.
Look,
back to the Greeks and the Romans who invented wrestling. I mean, they used the word competitio and meant to struggle together with, not struggle against. And that's what a rock band does. You struggle.
Hey, wait a minute. All you big shots who know so much about wrestling, where did you learn about wrestling? From behind the keys of a typewriter? I just asked you that question. This guy comes in here with a bull tie. You got four eyes. Here's another four eyes. And this young modern lady who needs a space. So who's talking about wrestling? A bunch of pseudo-intellectual writers don't know the first thing about wrestling. That's all. I want to tell you something. The only thing wrestling and rock and roll have in common is that the fans of both are morons.
I hate all of you. And the best part about it is I get to pay you all back in one single night. I don't even have to meet you one-on-one. The rock and wrestling connection, our reputation's at stake, and I'm going to take care of it. And what you going to do when the wired-out hosters run wild on you, Piper?